We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
And good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning show. And my name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. And we're very happy to have back in the studio once again Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she is here and we talk about lawn and garden care. The idea is if you have questions, maybe you have a problem and you're not quite sure what to do about it, you can tell us about that. Maybe you have some place in your yard and you're looking for a suggestion for a particular plant and you're not really quite sure. You know, maybe it's something about that place that's a little difficult and you're not quite sure. What would work best there? We can do that. We can talk about trees, shrubs, flowers, vegetables, houseplants, any and all of that. And if you call in and ask your question, tell us your problem, Sandy will do her best to help you out. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And you may also email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. So if you want to do it that way, that's fine too. Any point here, you have questions, you can give us a call. Thank you very much for being here again.
Good morning.
Well, I don't know this weather. I don't know. So here, April, it was close to being the warmest April on record. So we had a lot of warm days in April. And then suddenly, now here we're in May, we only got another 3 weeks of climatological spring. But, you know, I had been thinking this past week, and I'm thinking, wouldn't it be great to be able to get out and do some work? And here on Saturday...
I know.
It was cold, and it was windy, and it was overcast. So I've cut the grass a couple times, but I really haven't somehow managed to find a decent day when I had the time to do anything outside.
I know. I think we're having April weather now, and we have May weather in April.
I don't know. So and then one day we're going to wake up, and it's going to be 87 degrees and really humid, and I'm going to be whining. And you know that.
You whine?
Me?
No.
You know how I hate to complain.
No.
So now here we are. We're in it's the 11th of May. Is there anything in particular that right, you know, right now would be on your, you know, when you take your calendar out, and I know you have those calendars that say at particular times here maybe what you want to think about doing. If you had a good day, what would be the things to do right now?
Well, I think certainly if you have anything like perennials and you're wanting to divide any of them, move them, I'd be getting that done here real soon. Because normally we say through the month of April, and then but you really want to get them moved, divided into their place before we really get into warm weather, really particularly warm weather. So if you have those, I'd be finishing those kinds of things up. Certainly you can plant them. You know, if you buy them in pots and stuff, you can certainly plant them all through the month of May and into June and whenever you have time. And whenever you have water, you can certainly do that. The other thing would be if you are actually doing any reseeding of lawn areas, I'd be getting that done because we want to make sure that we – and now that we're getting into some rains, that would be good. If you haven't done a spring fertilization and you want to do that, I'd be doing that now as well on your lawn. So that would be good. We're really – for some things, we're probably – you know, if you have any of the spring blooming things that have already flowered, like lilacs, they're pretty well finished except for the later varieties are just now flowering. Any of the lilacs that are done, forsythias that are done, you'd want to go ahead and prune those back. So any of those early spring flowering things that are finished blooming, you'd want to go ahead and prune those back.
Yeah, okay. Now, I think a lot of people, their kind of rule of thumb about putting out tender things is Mother's Day.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
for a lot of people. Now, at the same time, though, last week on Saturday, the day before Mother's Day, we had a frost advisory day before.
Right.
So now that makes me think, okay, we're sort of past the point where you think it should be okay, but I kind of wonder about that, about putting something out that you think might be a little bit.
Usually what I do is on Mother's Day, then I look at the week's forecast. What's the forecast for the next week? Yeah. And if it looks like it's even iffy, as in it looks like it's, you know, hovering around 40 or something like that, then I'm a little bit concerned about putting out some things that really don't like cold weather. They just aren't going to like it. Any of your tropical type of plants and houseplants and those kind of things that you like to take outside, I'd wait. Now, if it looks like the next week or so it's going to stay fairly warm after Mother's Day, then I usually go ahead and chance it. But usually May 15th is a good date. If you just absolutely don't want to have to think about it, usually if you plant things after May 15th, you're fine. That would be even things like, I know a lot of people have already planted their tomatoes and peppers and stuff, but if you haven't done that, it's not too late to do that. And so, certainly we say May 15th is usually a good time for that. So any of the tropical kinds of things, dahlias and caladiums and all those kinds of things that typically we would wait until it warms up, May 15th is a good date to think about as well.
All right. I have some callers. Let's go to them, and we'll start with Champagne. Line one.
Hey, Sandy. I got a couple of related questions. One is, what do you do about Canadian thistles? And the other one is, if you make up a tank of Roundup during the fall and leave it over winter and it freezes, will it still be active in the following spring?
Wow. I'll handle your last question first, I guess. You know, typically we don't want any of that stuff to freeze.
Oh, yeah.
Because often what... And it may be one of those things that you just want to check the label and actually call the manufacturer and see what they recommend about that. Because a lot of times what will happen is it'll actually settle out, or it may still be active, but, you know, there's some concerns about how well it's going to actually mix at that point. So I think if it'd be one of those things, I would check with the manufacturer. Typically, if it hasn't frozen, it'd be fine.
Okay.
So that would be the fact that it's frozen. I'd be a little bit concerned. So they may recommend something, good agitation or something, just to make sure that it's. But I would definitely, on that case, I would definitely check with the manufacturer. And it should be, there should be a phone number on the actual label. I would check with that.
Yeah, actually, well, this is a backpack sprayer, so it probably ought to be agitated just in the process of using it. Yeah.
Right, absolutely. And the other thing is, sometimes with your sprayers, of course, sometimes they'll get clogged if you haven't actually rinsed them out. So I would definitely be checking the nozzle as well and cleaning that out properly and doing all those kinds of things to make sure you don't have anything that's actually settled in the nozzle.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So I would check with that. Canadian thistle, now where's the thistle? Is it just in a...
It's in my vegetable garden.
In the vegetable... Wow. Canadian thistle, if people aren't familiar with it, if they ever get it, they will be, because it really is a tough one to get rid of. It's a perennial, and it actually will send up, as you know, it'll send through these stolons, and then it spreads all over the place. And then it flowers, so it gets lots of seeds.
Well, yeah, I try to catch it before it flowers.
Absolutely, and that's number one.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Make sure it doesn't flower, even if that just means just to make sure it stays mowed will help.
Right,
will help that part.
Yeah.
The other part, if it's in your vegetable garden, it would be one of those things that actually you could do. If this is, I don't know if you already have your vegetable garden planted, you certainly could use something like Roundup on it to try to kill it off at that point.
Yeah, I've been using Roundup, and I do have my garden planted, but I can, on a still day when there's not much wind, I can still go around and spray it selectively with Roundup.
Right.
But the problem is that Roundup doesn't really control it very well.
Yeah, it's not the best thing in the world, but I thought since you already had it,
it
may be one of those things that where you may actually want to go with some of the like 2,4-D type products that you would typically use for dandelions and some of those.
Yeah, well, the stuff that you're supposed to use on thistles is called a Transline,
right,
which is, I guess, a much more powerful herbicide, but it's very expensive, and I think maybe you even have to have a license to use it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That may be a restricted use chemical.
And it may even be that you have to have, special protective clothing when you use it.
Well, certainly for all of these, you read the label, make sure you have protective clothing. So that's probably not a good option for you. But usually Roundup is a point where it'll at least knock it down, and then one application isn't going to do it, but usually a couple of applications
you
can knock
it
down.
If you follow through with several applications, you might be able to get it.
And then a matter of, and actually, you know, those stolons are actually not too terribly deep. So sometimes you can actually do some, you know, actually trying to remove those stolons.
Well, I've got the ones that have come from seed, I've got this weeder thing that reaches, called Grandpa's Weeder, that reaches down and gets them pretty deeply.
Yeah.
But that doesn't work on the ones that...
Yeah, that are already, yeah.
That are already established. And I'll pass on something to your other listeners, that if these things are in like a corner of your garden, do not till that area, because all that's going to do is spread them. And I learned that the hard way.
I think we all learn things the hard way, unfortunately. But yes, you're absolutely right. So any of those things that have stolons, and that would be even true of things like field bindweed or any of those things that have these underground stolons, you're just creating more plants by tilling.
You're right.
You're absolutely right. So yeah, that is one of those things you really need to deal with it in other ways. To do. Yeah, so good luck on that. But I think
okay,
a little persistence on that will help.
I should have known better than to expect any miracle cure, but thank you anyway.
Yeah, good luck.
All okay. right, thank you for the call. We have some others here. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about things that grow in the home landscape. And if you got a problem, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Up next, we have someone in Loda, and that's line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a problem with a burning bush. This was on some landscaping that was put in about a year and a half ago. This spring, about 2 weeks ago, one of the plants started to desiccate, and actually it has died. Mm-hmm. I have two others that are affected. I sent a sample into the U of I plant clinic,
mm-hmm.
and the diagnosis came back as wing euonymus scale, and they gave me some suggestions on control. My question is, are you seeing or hearing of any other problems with this insect, and could this have come in on the new plantings? It's also affecting one of my older burning bushes that had been established and is 4 or 5 feet tall.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, euonymus scale, it gets its name for the very reason, the fact that it's fairly common on euonymus, which is what burning bush is. But there's a lot of, there's a ground cover euonymus. There's some that are more like shrub-like, they have, you know, yellow and green leaves and white and green leaves. So there's several different species of euonymus that are out there. And unfortunately, they all can get euonymus scale, and it is fairly common. Yeah, unfortunately. So it is one of those things, but it's, you know, scale is a tough one because a lot of times it goes undetected for long periods of time because it's, you know, they don't really have any heads and tails and legs that tell us that they're alive. They just look like little helmets for the most part. They're just, you know, these things that are stuck on the stem. So it's very easy to miss them. And so they may have the infestation for a couple of years before we notice that they're starting to die or whatever, and then we have issues with them. So I don't even know if maybe the older one might have actually had it first. And, you know, it's hard to say where it came in. It certainly is a common problem, unfortunately.
So you had other reports this spring? It's not uncommon then?
We've had lots of people bring in different types of scale. Euonymus scale is certainly one of them. And we've had oyster shale and pine needle scale. We've seen quite a bit of that on mugo pines. So scale is certainly one of those insects that we have issues with. And again, I think it's mainly because it goes undetected for so long until we start having problems. And then it's reached such high populations that it makes it harder to get rid of. And also, I will tell you on scale, which probably plant clinic, I'm sure they told you this, but in the sense that scale is real important, that you have to spray it at a particular time. Timing is really important with scale. When they're older and mature, it's really hard to control them. So we try to control the young ones. So you have to get a good identification. What scale is it? Because not all of them are sprayed at the same time. And then knowing when to actually spray them is the really important part too. And sometimes,
okay.
And sometimes good pruning, you know, sometimes you can prune some of it out. So any way you can reduce the populations can help. So that is one of the issues. So hopefully your other ones at least are at the point now where you can go ahead and save that one.
Well, just to give anyone else a heads up, suggested that the crawler stage is when the time to treat it.
Right.
And it was just coming out in southern Illinois late last week, and they said to be watchful this week to make sure and hit this crawler stage sometime in the next week or two.
Yeah, and it is one of those things. They actually say if you know catalpa trees, and euonymus scale is really one of those that when catalpa starts to bloom, and that's that big tree, and so it's usually pretty obvious. If you know what a catalpa is, they're pretty obvious when they're in bloom, and that's typically when the crawlers come out. But, you know, it was so warm in April, I have a feeling that a lot of things are going to come out a little bit, even the flowers are going to come out a little bit earlier. So it is important. And you're absolutely right. It would be the crawler stage, which is the young ones.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
for your help.
Good luck.
All right, thanks. And just to make sure people know what we're talking about, scale is an insect.
Yes.
And yet, though, at various times in its life, it's a thing that's on the plant, and it doesn't look like it should be alive.
No, there's no
there's
head,
nothing you can tell.
There's no, yeah.
It doesn't look like, it doesn't have a head, doesn't have legs. It's not the kind of thing where you'd look at it and say, oh, that's a bug. No.
No. And that's why I think it goes undetected. Now, the only one that's really, really obvious is pine needle scale and typically it's on mugo pines, but it looks like, you know, the old-fashioned white flocked pine trees. So it's very obvious because it's white. The other ones tend to be brown, and they look like they're part of the stem, and so most of the time people don't notice them.
Okay.
So yes, it's an insect, but we would see, anything, as I mentioned, on mugo pine, certainly euonymus would be typical ones that we might see. But I've even seen orchisote scale on dogwoods, on, a lot of other plants as well. So it's just one of those things that try to be observant, at least on your plants.
And apparently someone was listening to the earlier conversation, the person who called in and said they had this Roundup and it was in their, I'm sure it was in their shed or something like this over the winter. Apparently somebody was listening and said that in fact that it's not a problem. If it freezes, it's okay. It will still work.
It still works. Okay, that's good.
And I'm sure that there are a lot of people, and I do, who have things like that, have Roundup, or maybe they have some insecticide or, some kind of liquid chemical thing that they use for their garden that they keep in their garage or they keep in their garden shed. And I don't think about, in the fall, taking that and bringing it into the basement so that it doesn't freeze.
Yeah, yeah. But it really should, because it'll remain more active. And for some things, as I said, sometimes they'll actually settle out and they'll separate. Yeah. If it's an emulsion, sometimes it'll separate and then it becomes really hard to apply it. So that's good to know about Roundup. So making sure that you shake it properly and make sure that it's mixed properly.
So if you have some, it should be okay, but it might also
it'd
be a good idea. Yeah, in the fall, when you're done with all that stuff, bring it inside.
It's like the lawnmower. When you're supposed to do all
those
things.
You bring your lawnmower inside?
Sure. You're supposed to do things. At least that's what I've been told. You're supposed to do things to the lawnmower over the winter.
Yes.
Drain the gas and all this
kind
of stuff. Which I know nothing about. But at that time, normal people would go ahead and take in their pesticides as well.
Okay. Very good. On to Tazewell County, line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a Japanese maple. It's about 5 years old. It was doing beautifully this spring, and then we had a freeze, and now it's just kind of all shriveled.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's still flexibility in a lot of the limbs, but nothing has happened, and I don't know. Help!
I think I heard that from the Japanese maple as well. So when did all this happen? When did it shrivel up? How long has it been since it shriveled?
Mid-April.
Mm-hmm. Usually, a couple of things we saw this spring, and I think probably it was widespread, I'm imagining it was widespread through Illinois, was the fact that we had those high winds, horribly, horribly high winds. And I had quite a few plants that absolutely the leaves got fried. I mean, it looks like they're fried because they're hanging on. They're not falling off, but they're just all burnt up. And I do wonder a little bit about your Japanese maple doing that as well, because when the leaves are so tender, they're first coming out and they're so tender, wind is really a big issue for them. So what's the good news? The good news is that typically trees have the ability to leaf out again. They still have live buds. Sometimes you'll see a little bit of dieback, but they still have their auxiliary buds that will go ahead and leaf out. But it usually takes a while. And so they'll sit there and they'll mope and nothing will happen, nothing happened. Typically, within 2 to 3 weeks, you'll start to see some new growth on them. So I think you're kind of at the end stage here, but it sounds like, if the branches still seem like they're nice and pliable, it sounds like you've just had an issue with those leaves. And they certainly, on a tree that's been there for 5 years, I would think it'd be healthy enough to break out new buds. So don't give up on yet. It'll look sad for a while. Yeah, it looks sad for a while, but just go ahead and, if we get into a drought period, I'd make sure you water it. But usually within a few weeks, you'll start to see some little bit of new growth. And they look really sad because those old leaves that are all burnt up don't fall off. They sort of just stay there, and it makes them look even worse.
Okay.
So don't give up.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks. Very good. On to another caller, and that would be someone in Urbana and line three. Hello.
Yes, this is a fellow sufferer with among other things, Canada thistle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, but what we have found is there is a herbicide called Stinger that is particularly good against thistle. I mean, it does actually make it shrivel, which just gladdens our hearts. it does. We have it in a prairie, so we have to be careful how we use it, but it does not damage grass. So that's a plus and a minus. And it is terribly expensive. I mean, it's like $500 for 2 gallons.
Yeah.
But if you go with a peanut butter jar to an FS place in the country, I mean, we haven't found it at the one in Urbana, but one out north of here, they'll sell you a cup of it.
Oh, no. Don't tell me this.
Oh, aren't they supposed to?
No. Never, 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 ever, ever, ever put pesticides in a container it wasn't intended for. There are more children that are sickened by drinking out of a container that they didn't realize had pesticide in it.
Oh,
so,
I see.
So
well,
it, plus, it's absolutely illegal, to tell you the truth.
Well, actually,
So I understand what you're saying. You're trying to be helpful.
No, but what actually have you seen those? There's a container that probably holds 2 cups. And it's got a kind of a measuring device on it, so you tip it up and you can measure out smaller quantities because it takes like a teaspoon per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they gave it to us, and they did not.
It has to have the label with it. It has to have the complete label with it. So I'm just letting you know that pesticides are not meant to be purchased that way. So we really can't advocate that.
So what do people do who need small amounts of pesticides?
And that's what I was going to mention when you mentioned the Stinger and actually Transline, both of those. Those are typically farm-related products.
Right, right,
and so
exactly.
They're sold in huge quantities. And unfortunately for homeowners and home gardeners, those are not packaged for homeowners and home gardeners. At this point, I don't know that any of those are packaged in small amounts like what you're talking about. So unfortunately, I don't know, maybe people need to get together. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
I know it's a big issue, but believe me, it's one of those things that's been going on for a long time and that there are certain chemicals that are available to commercial growers that it's not that they can't be used in these other situations. It's just because for whatever reason, the manufacturers decided to go with the commercial audience as opposed to a homeowner audience.
And of course, there aren't lots of people who are having to deal with Canada people on a major scale.
Right.
So
right.
Could a garden group do that and sort of hire? I mean, how strict are the rules about the use of those herbicides?
Well, how strict are the rules? They're not meant to be purchased unless the total label. They're not meant to be purchased unless they're in the original container with the complete label, the complete instructions, and all those things that go along.
Oh, sure, and then
with
all the poison warnings. And stuff.
Yeah, all the poison warnings. Absolutely, everything is supposed to be with that pesticide at all times.
Okay.
So that's number one.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as divvying it out and putting it in mason jars or whatever, it's just not an appropriate use.
Sure.
And actually is an illegal use. Mm-hmm. But if a small group wanted to get together and then somehow, you know, everybody goes to one place and get their pesticides and put it in their sprayers and all that kind of stuff, you could do that. But.
Or could some sort of garden group sort of set themselves up as the sprayers and go around and spray for people?
Well, that's a whole other issue, I'll tell you, because the reason is when you're spraying in your own backyard is one thing, but the minute you step off your own property and start spraying on other people's property, then you have to have a license. You have to be a certified applicator.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
So, yes, absolutely. So it's a whole different ballgame when people start spraying for other people. You have to be licensed.
Okay, even
though it's the exact same product, even though it's Roundup, even though it's 7 or whatever you're spraying in your backyard, the minute you step off your own property, then the rules change.
So does it make a difference if there's a charge or not?
Matter.
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
And could you fill up, like, this guy's backpack sprayer and then, you know, I drive right over your house and you use it and... I mean, is that within the realms of possibility?
I suppose someone could work that kind of thing out. But, that's one of those things that is really not the appropriate use of the way those pesticides are meant to be used. Because then you're transporting the pesticide, again, not in a proper package with the proper label and all that kind of stuff. And it's absolutely, there's a lot of environmental concerns here. You know, if someone was in a car wreck or whatever, I mean, there's lots of things that can go wrong. And the law has to look toward those things that could go wrong. So
You know, it's really rotten that a weed as terrible as Canada thistle
wins
both over the gardening fence and over the bureaucratic fence.
Yeah, it is. It is one of those things, and you're absolutely right. Typically, it is one of those things. It's so we have to use those pesticides and those herbicides that are available to homeowners and home gardeners.
Okay, and the shovel.
And the shovel. There you go.
And the shovel. Okay.
Good luck. Good questions, but good luck.
All right. Very good. We're at our midpoint here. Sandy Mason is the guest. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she's on the program once a month. It's always on Tuesday, and we take questions on lawn and garden care. If you have some problem, maybe you're looking for a suggestion of a particular plant, any on all that, we can talk about turf and ornamentals and stuff you can eat and houseplants and any and all of that. You can call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You may also email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. Up next, we'll talk with somebody in Pontiac, line 4. Hello. Yes.
Hello. I have a lovely old devil's walking stick in the yard, or Harry Lauder's walking stick, with the corkscrew branches. And a couple of times in the last couple of years, there's been like one branch that just doesn't leaf out, and that seemed to be dead. And I've cut some of those out. Now I have three or four, and somebody has said that it might be borers that are in there. It's a really old plant. It was old when I moved to the house, and I'm wondering if just some of the branches die off, or is there something I should be looking for or some way to treat it?
Right. Well, I'm not sure about borers on those guys, but that would be something. Typically, you'd probably see a hole of some kind that would indicate that there had been borers in there. I know they do get a fungal canker disease on those. And so there would be one of those things that I'd really, now it may be hard because maybe these are coming off the main trunk, but, you know, often good sanitation, trying to get those cut away. Now, again, I don't know if this is if these are coming off the main trunk, then that gets really hard because typically for canker diseases, we try to actually cut, you know, below where you're actually seeing the damage, several inches below, which may mean, you know, then that gets really hard if it's off the main trunk.
Yeah, so, it's multi-branching. There's many big branches on it.
Yeah, that might be one of the things that you might want to take to U of I, take a sample to U of I Plant Clinic, maybe a good picture and kind of give them some indications of what's going on. But I know they do get a fungal canker disease, and that might be one of those things that you really should probably know a little bit more about it, in the sense that how can you control it. And typically it's through judicious pruning and, you know, trying to do some of those things to try to get it out of there. But
yeah, this year it gets water shoots in it. The spring shoots it. And I cut all those out and made a little twig fence in my yard. It was really kind of fun because they're real flexible and they work well. So.
Oh, fun. It's great that you have an old one. I haven't seen a whole lot of old ones, so it doesn't seem like they're ones that are long-term trees. So that's great that you have an old one.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Uh-huh, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye.
Over to Belgium, line 1. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah.
My rotary phone is having some problems here.
Rotary
they still
phone?
Make those?
Holy cow.
Yeah.
It's an antique,
those?
I'm sure.
Yes. That tells you where I'm coming from, doesn't it? This question is not going to be about trees like I usually ask you about. And I've already done what I've already made my choice and done what I'm going to do. But I've been conflicted here. I've decided to plant some potatoes, and I'm kind of new at potatoes. And last year I planted them, and they didn't really do all that well. And I planted them again this year. Now, one way is, you obviously take your potatoes and you cut them up so you keep an eye on each one so they grow from the little eyes, and you put them in the ground, and up comes a potato.
Mm-hmm.
Now, under one scenario, you're supposed to put the potatoes in a little hole, and then you plant them, and as they grow up, you cover them up with dirt, and you let them get higher and cover them up with dirt and pile and pile and pile them until you get a nice big hill of potatoes. The other way I've been told to do it is kind of dig a trench about 6 inches deep and put the potatoes in the 6-inch deep thing and pile the dirt over and forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which way am I supposed to do it?
You could do it either way.
Uh-huh.
It really kind of depends on you. I think part of it is if you had soil that didn't drain very well, I'd go with the hilling method, because the trench method gets a little bit harder, in the sense that if you have soil that doesn't drain well, then you may have more issues and probably will have more issues with the potato actually rotting. So that may be one indication, and depending on what kind of soil you have, that's fine. But there's lots of ways to grow potatoes. I don't know if you heard of straw potatoes, where you actually put them on the ground, and you just pile straw on them, or actually in a container. Often it's in a container, and then you just keep piling straw on them as they grow. And so there's lots of ways, different ways to grow potatoes. It's just whatever works for you.
Now, are you supposed to continue to cover them up for a while? Because under one scenario that my wife found on the internet, they said you were supposed to, as the potatoes emerge from the dirt, you're supposed to continue to keep piling them up until they flower. Well, if you keep covering them up, how are you going to find out when they flower?
Oh, well, you're not supposed to cover up the whole plant. I think that the whole idea is to continue to hill them, because you never want the potato to actually get any sunlight at all. That's what causes that greening. So we typically don't want to see that. So usually that's why they keep saying just keep piling it up, just to make sure that none of the potatoes actually get to the top of the surface. Plus you get a little bit more production by piling them up a little bit. But we're not talking about to the point where you just see a few leaves off the top. We're not talking about piling up that much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're still going to flower and all that kind of good stuff.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, very good. And we'll keep going. And next we'll talk with somebody on who's north of Urbana. They're on a cell phone. Line 2. Hello.
Yes. On the subject of divvying up the herbicide without the labels for the Canada thistles, why not just print the label off the internet and print a paste a label on each mason jar when you pass them out? I'll take my answer on the air. Thanks. Bye.
They're probably still not going to work.
I'm not an expert on pesticide law by any means, but, you know, obviously that's better than having a container that doesn't. But, again, now you're dealing with a lid that is not childproof. Typically, all pesticide lids are childproof. And, again, it goes back to the whole thing about all the poisonings that happen with small children and containers that are not proper for pesticides. So I would still have a concern with that and the fact that it doesn't have a childproof lid.
Okay. So maybe it sounds like maybe the best thing is, you know, smack them around with some Roundup the best you can, and then you may have to go in and try to physically dig them out.
Or just start, you know, everybody write to the manufacturer of these chemicals and say, hey, we want a homeowner product. And maybe it's enough that they'll decide that they want to go that route. But they have to do special testing and all that kind of stuff to actually package it for homeowners as well. But that might be another route. Maybe that's something that needs to be done. I don't know.
Okay. You just want people to follow the rules. And you want people to... I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think that your concern, is, and I'm sure a lot of people's concern, is the safety...
Absolutely.
Of the people who are going to be using the products. And that's why there's exhaustive labeling. And that's why you want people to read the label. You want people to use it like the label directs. Don't just do it any way that you can think of.
Right.
The idea is that, you know, you're trying to keep people from being harmed or the environment from being harmed by using harmed or you know, whatever. So, you know, you really should be careful with these things.
And the pesticide label is actually considered a legal document. We don't think of it that way, but it's actually considered a legal document, and it's against the law to use a pesticide against the label directions, period. So...
Okay.
I know. It's a boring... And I understand the issue. It's just I'm not sure this is the way to solve it.
All right. Let's see. Next, we'll talk with somebody in Champaign. Line 3. Hello.
Hello. I have another question about poisoning, but I'm thinking of rhubarb, if it's been frosted or frozen. We have two mature plants that we covered the first time it was going down low, and they seemed fine, and we harvested and cooked it, and it was fine. Nobody was, you know, no problem. How do you tell? Now, we were gone this last weekend, and, you know, some people said, oh, we had, you know, it was 34, I think, here in town.
Mm-hmm.
How do you tell by looking at it, or how do you make that distinction, and should we be concerned that we have some that's ready to pick now and
sure.
It looks fine?
Sure. And that's an excellent question, and because there is certainly some concerns that people are not supposed to, just so if people aren't familiar with this, for rhubarb, you're not supposed to eat the leaves anyway. And the concern is when they go through a frost, that actually some of that oxalic acid and some of those things that are in the leaves actually will migrate into the petiole, the part that we're actually eating. So there's the concern. And it's one of those things that's probably not a life-threatening issue, but it certainly would cause some irritation to throats and those kind of things. So it's not something we want to do. So how can you tell? How can you tell? The leaves will look like cooked spinach. It will look like it's been frozen.
So if
the leaves are damaged, they look like cooked spinach, then I would just harvest those and put them in the compost pile. I wouldn't eat them. And then the new stuff that comes up and looks fine, then fine. You can go ahead and eat that part. So it's not, it's only those that are present during the frost. And that's, again, we're probably being overly cautious, but it's best to be overly cautious. So if the leaves look nice and healthy, no big problem, I wouldn't have any hesitation to go ahead and eat the rhubarb.
Okay, very good. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Okay, very
Bye-bye.
Good. And next, we'll talk with someone in LaGrange, line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm a church gardener. I garden with my church.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some English ivy that has just, you know, like taken over. It's like gone wild. And it also has a lot of weeds.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of plants within there, a lot of shrubs. And is there an herbicide that we can use to kill the weeds but not the shrubs?
So this is in a landscape area where the English ivy...
And the English ivy is just kind of taken over, but, the you know, like grass is coming up and dandelions are coming up. And
right.
It's such a massive area that though we've put stuff on the grass to kill the dandelions in the grass, we don't know what to put on the the ivy. That won't kill the ivy and the plant.
Right, right. I think there's a couple of herbicides you actually could use for any grasses that are coming up within the ivy. But as far as any of the other herbicides, they're going to affect the ivy and the shrubs and everything else. We really don't have anything that's going to selectively kill the dandelions within something that's a broadleaf like that, like English ivy or shrubs or anything like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so unfortunately...
They're both broadleaf.
Yeah. So those kind of chemicals that will attack dandelions would also affect the English ivy and the shrubs.
What can we put on just for the grass?
There actually is a product, I think it is, that we're talking about for homeowners, but there's a product called Post, and I think it is also, there's a labeling or a packaging for homeowners as well, but it's strictly to kill grasses.
It's called Post?
Post, P-O-A-S-T, Post.
And I can just get that at the
I would check, or just ask when you go to a garden center. It may be under a different name. That's why I'm kind of hesitating a little bit. For homeowners, it may be under a different name. But just ask that you have what the situation is where you have these broadleaf type plants and you just want to kill the grass that's already emerged.
Okay, because that would help us a lot. Now, can I have a follow-up question?
Yeah, sure.
This one's more fun. We're looking for two... This one I think is tough, though. Two highlight plants to go by our door because we're actually re-landscaping. I want to match them, but they can't be higher than 10 feet.
Highlight?
You know, like...
full sun type plants?
You know, like two very decorative plants.
But they can get big? They can get to 10 feet?
They can get up to 10 feet, yes.
And how wide can they get?
About... 6 feet. I was looking at
that's pretty good size.
Like that new brand of cherry tree, the Big Sis, but I think they might get a little too tall.
Okay, so you're wanting a shrub or a tree or
anything that just they kind of complement the doorway.
Okay,
and it's kind of rustic, pretty rustic.
Yeah, you might think of there actually is a small crab apple called Sergeant Crab,
and they I think they get too tall.
Okay. Typically they only stay to 10 feet or so, 10 or 12 maybe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but they get wide. They get fairly wide. But they're pretty short plants typically.
Okay.
So that would be one I would think of because it makes a nice kind of focal point type of plant.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Focal point, that's the word.
Yeah, right. As far as some other plants, and you don't
That was on my short list.
That was on your short list?
Yeah.
There certainly are some nice lilacs now, some smaller lilacs that are very pretty, and they'd be fragrant next to the doorway, which is very nice.
That was on my short list.
Yeah, so there's
the
a couple
Korean
of different new
one?
Ones. Right.
Another one besides the Korean?
Well, the Korean is just the basic one, and then there's a bunch of cultivars that are off of those Korean lilacs.
Oh, okay.
So there's several of them that are out there. And there's actually a couple of them that are rebloomers. I don't have any experience with those just yet, but there's one called Bloomerang, I think it's called. And it's supposed to have a little bit of a rebloom later on in the season. And that might be something that's kind of fun, and it's supposed to stay smaller. Mm-hmm. So you might think about some of the newer lilacs that are to stay smaller. There's actually a couple of Weigelas that are on the small end of things.
What is it called?
Weigela. Weigela. It's a Weigela. I think I'm spelling that right. Dave is like frowning, going, I don't know what you're talking about, woman. What are you talking about, woman?
I don't even know what that one is.
It's a Weigela. Yeah, I don't know how to explain it. They're blooming right now. They're blooming right now.
Weigela. Weigela.
I think that's what I said.
Is it a tree or a shrub?
It's a shrub.
Okay.
It's a small genus of about 12 species of deciduous shrubs.
He's reading that off the internet, you
well,
all.
Okay.
Mr. Smarty Pants.
That's the way you learn stuff.
Mr. Smarty Pants.
Well, that's why I got everything on my list. I'm just trying to check with an
but
expert.
That's, yeah, and that's and there actually is one called My Monet, which is a nice small, it's a really small one. Which would
My Monet?
Uh-huh, like the painter, My Monet.
Okay.
And that's a nice small one as well. So that might be one, and it has, and they're actually blooming right now. So that might
be
one.
Do you have any ideas for like an evergreen?
For an evergreen, do you want?
Just throwing it out there because I just was thinking.
Well, you certainly could think about boxwood, you know, which are broadleaf evergreens. If you like the way those look,
we are going with lots of boxwood.
Yeah, you certainly could do that, and you could do some if you want a formal look to it. You certainly do some pyramidal looking ones or something along those lines if you want it for an evergreen. Also, you might even think about some of the viburnums. Now, those are going to get much bigger, but if you're wanting just a large shrub, there's a lot of great viburnums, and there's Korean spice and burkwood are a couple of really nice ones because they have very fragrant flowers, and I was thinking that for the doorway. It's really kind of a nice thing to have a fragrant flower like that.
Korean spice and burkwood?
And burkwood, but those are big shrubs. You know, we're back to the whole, but you said 10 by 6, so they certainly could
fit. We want it to be very complementary to the door.
Yeah, so those might be ones too. So you might kind of look there. We've given you a wide range here.
I have some research to do.
Yeah, so you just look at the different ones.
I my short list, so I thank you for that.
Okay, well, good luck.
All right, very
thank
good.
You so much.
Sure.
All right, we have about 7-8 minutes left in this part of Focus with Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U by Extension in Champaign County. She knows stuff. I just read it off the internet. She actually knows stuff. And if you have questions about stuff that grows in the home landscape, give us a call. We'll get as many as we can. And we have a couple people standing by here. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And our next caller is in Champaign, line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I missed the first part of the talk, so Sandy may have addressed this, but my yard has gone crazy with weeds this year, and I was wondering, is there some kind of a reference book on weeds in Illinois that I can look at? At least I need to know their names when I curse them and pull them out.
Just call them by name. I like that. I like to call them by name.
A weed by any other name.
Yeah, no kidding. There actually is a fairly nice book, and I think it is available through U of I publications, and it's called Weeds of the North Central States.
Weeds of
the North Central States.
Yeah.
And actually, they're line drawings, but it's nice and that they're typically ones that we would see around here. And it's going to include all kinds of weeds, not just lawn type of weeds.
And where would I find this? Is it Cooperative Extension or is it?
We have, you may want to check with I think we might have some copies at our office. And our number is 217-333-7672.
Okay.
Or you could look at on the website for the U of I publications. ACES Publications.
Okay.
And I think they sell it through the publications. I think it's available through them.
Okay.
So that would be a good one, and it's really kind of a nice book because it gives you, you know, quite a bit of information. It doesn't tell you necessarily how to control them, but it certainly will give you names for them.
Okay.
Also, if you have a particular one that you just can't figure out what it is, we do that all the time.
Well,
you know.
It's one that I'm having a real problem with, and I'm not a very big woman. It's very hard to dig it out, and I don't know how to treat it. it. It's taken over in our compost area. Mm-hmm. Now I can see that there are little plants coming out in the lawn, too. It's got these, it's a very large plant. So I have this vague memory. Someone called it tobacco weed, but I think I could be making that up. Mm. It's got thick, kind of gray-green, more light green, let's say grayish-tinted, thick, wavy leaves, very large, thick stems, and it grows huge. It, you know, and it produces, when it's propagating, it produces these burrs, these little things that if you walk by, you know, you'll have them in your trousers, and that's
right, right. It's probably burdock.
Burdock.
Mm-hmm. There's a pale burdock. There's a couple of different burdocks. There's curly dock, and there's a couple of different ones. But there's burdock that has these giant. They almost look like rhubarb leaves. I had somebody tell me they thought they looked. But only they're fuzzier.
Yes, it's B-U-R-D-O-C-H.
D-O-C-K.
Oh, D-O-C-K.
So burdock.
Yes, and I find that unless I take them out when they're really tiny,
you're right.
Right now, there's nothing I can do except spray them, and I don't want to spray them. So what do I do?
Yeah, and they are a biennial, so they flower the second year. So if you can get them when they're in that rosette of leaves the first year, which you've probably found, that helps immensely. To try to get them in, as you know, when they're younger, they tend to die easier.
Exactly.
But they have a huge taproot, which you have found.
Yeah.
They have a huge taproot, and that's what makes it so hard to get. It's like with dandelions, even if you break it off, then they have a tendency to regrow. So that's a big issue for those. This is in your compost pile, you said?
It's in the we've got that three
around the
section compost set up. So it's growing in two of those bins in the compost, and it's growing around the base of the compost now. So it's already propagated and spreading.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure that if we don't do something, it's going to be all over the place.
Right.
So hard to eradicate.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't know if you've used herbicides or how you feel about using herbicides. I know you said you didn't necessarily want to do that.
But this was a year I wasn't going to tell anyone, but I think I'm going to...
Your secret is safe with me.
It's a dark secret that I was going to get something I could squirt at it, and I'm not sure what I should get.
You know, actually, you know, I know we talk about Roundup all the time, but the glyphosate-type products, which is what is in Roundup.
What kind of product?
It's Roundup is the brand name.
Yes.
But glyphosate is actually the chemical name. So you don't have to buy Roundup.
Right.
You can just make sure that you get a product, and the chemical name is glyphosate.
Glyphosate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so look for in other words, you can get the generic. You don't have to buy Roundup. Is my whole point.
I see.
And so you may find, but again, that kills pretty much anything green that you spray it on. But I have had problems with burdock as well, and I have done that where I actually just individually spray the plants, and it does a pretty good job of getting rid of them.
Is
that
it
way.
Leaves you spray, or do you have to reach? Sort of shoot down into the...
No, you're just spraying the leaves. That's all you want to do, and you don't have to soak them. You just want to cover the leaves, spray the leaves, and it's fine. And it does a pretty good job of actually killing off the whole thing.
Okay.
So you may want to... And did you find the book?
I did find the book. Weeds of the North Central States, you can get it through the U of I publications. And what I did is I put into the browser University of Illinois Extension Publications, and I got to the place. It's $13.50. So, and it looks like you can order it. You can order it that. You can just order it online that way if you want to. Sure. Yeah,
so that's pretty good. And then also just check with you can bring things into the local extension office, and we'll try to help as best we can as far as identification. We do that a lot. So good luck. That's
thank
a tough one.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. We'll go to cell phone. Somebody else's cell phone here on I-57, I believe, on line one. Hello.
Yes. Yes. Other than cutting or pruning, is there a good way to control all the suckers from crabapple trees?
Yeah. I would be rich if I had a really good solution for that, because you're absolutely right. They're really hard on crabapples. There is stuff called sucker stopper. And I've had sort of mixed feelings about it. I felt like it helped a little bit, but it's a kind of expensive So it could be a product that you might want to try because maybe you'd have a little better success with other plants that you have. Probably the biggest thing with the suckers is to try and dig down and get down as far as you possibly can. Don't just cut them off at soil level, in other words. So try to dig down as best you can, and then actually either some people have said they've had better luck if they actually tear them off, and which kind of makes sense because it might help it to not regrow that way. But just trying to just don't do it right at soil level. Just dig down and try to cut them off as best you can, and then you may want to try the sucker stopper, and you may have better success than maybe what I had. But that's the only product that I know that's labeled to be used that way. So
thank you.
Yeah, good luck. It's a tough issue.
Okay, to next Muhammad, line 3. Hello.
Hello. Yes. I wanted to ask about resources that are available for windbreak trees and shrubs that are truly, truly, truly good for central Illinois and Indiana.
Yeah. So obviously you're looking for an evergreen, I assume.
Hoping, yeah, because the wintertime is... We right. really need it then.
Okay. So probably the ones that don't work well but are often used, so I will sort of warn you, are white pines. And white pines just don't like wind, but I see them used for windbreaks all the time, and maybe that's what you've had the issue is. But they really don't like wind. So white pines, I would really limit the use of them. I would be looking more at Norway spruces, white spruces, Douglas fir, and it's always a good idea to get a mix in there. That way, if you do have some sort of insect or disease come through, it doesn't take out the whole bunch. So I would definitely be looking at the spruces, and even blue spruce. It's a little slower growing, but it's a nice dense tree, so it's really good for windbreaks. And then certainly the Doug firs. I'd probably limit the use of pines, period, simply because they tend to open up as they age, and then we're also having some issues with Scotch pines actually having a nematode problem. So
I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. So pines I'd kind of limit, period. But certainly the spruces and Douglas firs I think are good route to go.
Excellent. And is there any resource on those other windbreak type bushes that we could look for or that you know of?
As in how big they get and those kind of info, or
yeah, I like that kind of info, and just maybe other suggestions for other species too.
Yeah,
like a publication or.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know of a publication. You actually can go to the University of Illinois, and I think if you just Google, probably within the University of Illinois, if you get to the forestry, because I don't remember exactly what the website is for that particular one, but it talks more about forestry-type issues, and I think it does actually have a section on the windbreaks as well.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Well, we're going to have to stop, and I'm sorry we have a couple people that we can't take. Sandy will be back again next month, so we'll be doing this again then. And you might also tune in for the program Illinois Gardener, Thursday nights, 7 o'clock on WILL-TV. There is a rotating cast of characters that appears on the show. Sandy is often on the program, and people from the university, from other, from some of the garden centers around town, and it's a live show, and there always is that opportunity to call in and ask questions as well. Any last thing you want to mention?
Well, you know, June is Garden Walk Month, so I'll be checking about garden walks, and the Champaign County Garden Walk is June 26th, so we'll be long.
Sandy Mations, she is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Thanks very much.
Uh-huh, thank you.